I think everybody who plays in South Africa, and probably the South Africans abroad, know that Rusty is watching everything all the time, and that performance can get you into a team for the most part. And I think that's very good for South African rugby at a URC level and in the test arenas.
Sasha's out, and that's a big blow for the Stormers, but it's also that time that we start looking at semi-finals, finals, Springboks, international season. And I say, sorry, mate, I've got no cash. He says, no harm at all, Gov. No harm in asking. So predictable, but so good. For the Bulls, for the Stormers, commiserations for the Lions. With the greatest respect to the Lions, given who was out, that they've been in Ireland for the best part of a month. I don't know how anyone in their hearts, when they take their brain and they apply it to that heart, would have given them a shot. No surprises. They were always going to take 30 points plus. Everyone's raving about they had a good season. They ended seventh. So we'll leave it at that when it comes to the Lions. They had a first ever URC playoff, and they go into the Investec Champions Cup next season. But the gap between finishing seventh and being a top four team, clearly there. They lost 31-7 to Leinster's kind of A, B team. There were 12 players missing. They lost to Munster. Brave, but not rugby intelligent, because they were 15 on 13 at one stage, and they got pummeled 59-10 on the weekend. I know a lot of people at the DHL Stadium afterwards, I know they came to you, Zells, and said, the Lions will get Ruan Nell giving a passionate plea, patriotic South African. Everyone in Cape Town knew the Stormers were getting on a plane and going to Dublin, mate. And what shocks me the most is some people seem surprised that the Lions took a big one, and then equally seem surprised that the Bulls won as comfortably as they did. We said it would be 30 points. And hey, how did the Stormers get to 20? It was always going to be a 20-point game on grass. No surprises there. The only one I thought Connacht could maybe do it, when it got to 7-0, 7-all, they were in it, and then they kind of made too many mistakes. Top four in the league are the top four. Home advantage is everything. It played out as I thought. How did you see it play out?
Mate, it was a glorious weekend of knockout rugby in the URC. Disappointed for the Lions, but not at all surprised. I think Leinster have got a 90% home win record in the last three seasons, so they are very tough to beat there. And the Lions were missing some players. If you're going to knock the Lions about anything, you'd probably say lack of depth. So when you take some of their star players out of it and then send them to the hardest place to try and win away from home, that was a tall order. So I thought they put in a brave effort. Obviously came up well short, but they've had a great season, punched above their weight. And there's some stars coming through there. Sibo Mahashe, obviously, is the guy we've mentioned before, and Bato Klikani had top seasons and are bright, bright stars of the future. So we obviously hope for the best for the Lions for next season, but this is the end of the road for them. Bulls and Stormers are still in the mix. I had the Bulls to beat Munster, but for it to be close, I didn't think it would be such a big one. And they were superb. You spoke about Munster and the situation at the club at the moment and potentially missing a couple of players. How are they going to roll out at Loftus? And the Bulls just punished them emphatically. So great win for the Bulls. They got the added fillip of finding out that they don't have to go and play Glasgow in Scotstoun on the carpet. They're going to be at Murrayfield playing on the grass. That's a huge boost for them. And I'd love to see what the Bulls do against Glasgow in that semi-final. And then the Stormers convincingly beat Cardiff, bounced back from that loss in Cardiff at Cape Town Stadium to put them to the sword and advance to the final four, where they will travel to Dublin to play Leinster.
Okay, thanks for that, Zells.
Update.
The update, mate. Sasha's out, and that's a big blow for the Stormers, but it's also that time that we start looking at semi-finals, finals, Springboks, international season. And so I kind of always have to grin, grit, smile, wave when people are picking their BOC team in March and April, and this is who has to play the All Blacks, and this is who has to play England. I'm always been of the belief is, let's see who's standing on the 20th of June, when all the domestic rugby in terms of club competitions has been played, because invariably the best 23, as every coach has it, never gets to play in that opening test match. Guys get injured, guys are unavailable, and while Sasha's been red hot, leading everything in the URC, it just takes one freak ankle tap, and that's a guy gone for 3 months. So Russie will be kind of hoping that these two semifinals leave him with some players. He'll be pleased that there's very few South Africans left in the Japanese League One final. I think there's one left that's of value to him, which is Malcolm Marx, and it's a big one.
Yep.
Congratulations to Franz Ludeke, who coaches the Spears. They threw to the final, but Damon Deland is on his way home unscathed. The Wild Knights lost in the semifinal. He's had a very good season. But looking at the situation, the Bulls, those big-name boxers that were in there, came out of that quarterfinal. Reputations enhanced. Another win. They've really been the form team in the back end of the season. And limited damage to national prospects. The Stormers, equally, with the exception, obviously, of Sasha. And he's a big blow. Anyone who tells me, well, you know what? We can do it without Sasha. You'll do it a lot easier with Sasha. So we hope he gets better. I see he kind of like had a bit of a rant on his Instagram account, but also said, we wake up in the morning, it's like head down and let's kind of recover. So he's out, and he'll be out. Possibly the earliest he'll be back is for rugby's greatest rivalry against the All Blacks. But the long term there is he's just got to be right for the World Cup. So that's the bigger picture at play there. It brings a guy like Marnie Lebok back into the equation. He's been doing great things in the second division in Japan, but away from the spotlight, away from the pressure of what's his kicking success rate. Did he miss one on Saturday for the Stormers? Did he make a poor decision? Pollard just kind of is peaking as he does these great players at the right time. And you know, it's like they say, one man's kind of misfortune is another man's opportunity, and that could be the case with Marnie Lebok. But looking at the Bok setup and those who are in the framework, who were the big movers for you from the Bulls and the Stormers from this weekend?
Well, a couple of guys spring to mind. I think Tuxum Kunu has had a cracking season, a bit of a breakout season, you could argue. Scored a rambunctious try from a line-out. And he is a sight to behold at full flight with the ball in hand. And then you look at that Bulls pack, like you mentioned, Cam Honeycomb having an absolute season. There's a couple of backline players there who've also put their hand up. But Russie's squad is so massive. The depth of talent available to him and the net that he's cast is so big that as much as we've had these injuries, and they obviously are something to factor in, unless somebody's been knocked out of contention for the World Cup, there's nothing to panic about because he's got a huge, huge squad and there's plenty of guys to fill in. Of his most capped players, the top 10 are, to date, touch wood, touch melamine, unscathed. Everybody's fine. So, and one of those guys is Andre Pollard, who had a cracking game for the Bulls at the weekend and is in fine form. So, I think the Bok are in a good space. I think there's a great mix. You could say it's top heavy towards veteran guys, but there's a great mix of established, experienced players who've got 50-plus caps. There's about 20 of those guys. And then a crop of youngsters. There's like a really sweet spot of youngsters coming through. Ethan Hooker is one of them who happens to be injured, and Sasha is one of them who happens to be injured. But there's a group of these sub-25-year-olds coming through now that are the sky's the limit. Massive upside, massive potential, have performed in the URC. Some of them have already performed to great heights in the test arena, and that bodes very well for the future. So in the short term, yes, we have a lot of injuries. In a way, if you're going to have old guys injured, you want them injured the year before the World Cup, not the year of the World Cup. But I don't think the Bok are anywhere near a position of being in crisis or in trouble or the heat going up. I think there's plenty of guys to fill the holes.
You know, we spoke last year about Russie picking so many players, being willing to kind of change 12, 13 players from one test to the other, and emphasizing it was no disrespect to the opposition, but his thing is you've got to give players game time.
Yeah.
They've got to be on the field. You can't simulate those situations. They've got to play. And I think back to Cardiff and that last test when they beat an understrength Wales side 73-0, but they were missing 15, 16 players who had played early on that tour. And it was still a formidable side that was put out. And then you get to a season like this, and the benefits of picking those players last season in big games now becomes evident because, for example, you lose a Sasha, it's like Marnie's still there.
Yeah.
Pollard is still there. And so last year when people were saying, who needs Andre Pollard? South Africa does. He's 32 years old. He's won back-to-back World Cups. We lose all these scrum-offs, but Embriz Papi comes back and he's playing some of the best rugby of his life.
Fabulous rugby.
And then you just look at a guy like Damian Willemse coming into good form now at fullback, settled there. Cameron Hunter come back from a one-year layoff. He wasn't even part of the box last year because of injury. Just hitting his straps at the right time. And, you know, the key, we keep on saying this, Zels, is the season is so long and it's endless. It's 12 months. You can't expect the player to be at a peak for 28 matches. And the very good ones and the best ones just know when to come right. Huh? And it's that month leading into, that fortnight leading into playoffs. And those playoffs basically are just before the test season. And it's like you don't hear from some of those big names for like a good 60% of the domestic season. The next minute it's like, wow, look how good this guy is. We really need him. And that to me has been encouraging that we're not talking about any big name player that's out of form.
Mm.
The big name players have all started, they're peaking just at just the right time.
Totally.
And those youngsters are coming through. Now look at the Stormers, for example, and you think of who started in the props and then who was coming off the bench. I mean, those are talented kids at props. And props hit their straps at 28 plus. You've got kids 21, 23 that are just good enough to be playing in the URC there and good enough to be part of an extended national squad.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the credit should go to Rusty for that because he's created a squad where he's got double world champions who are motivated to perform because nobody is assured of their place. And not in a way where everybody feels threatened, but everybody knows the bottom line is Rusty's going to pick who he thinks is going to help the box win the next World Cup, and he's not afraid to break a few eggshells to get there. And that keeps everyone focused on, this week I have to perform, Rusty's going to be watching us, this is an opportunity to impress, and I don't want to drop the ball in this situation. And that what it also does is it gives hope to guys who in previous regimes or tenures would have known they're outside the picture, they're off the radar, there's no point, the motivation is different. So I think everybody who plays in South Africa and probably the South Africans abroad know that Rusty is watching everything all the time and that performance can get you into a team for the most part. And I think that's very good for South African rugby at a URC level and in the test arena. So again, the wealth of talent available here, a guy like Harold Steenkamp, we haven't even spoken about, I mean, was all world in his breakout season and is obviously a fine, fine player. So we've got tons and tons of talent in this country.
Well, if you look at the under-20s, what Kevin Foote has done, Dave Essel's high-performance manager, they played the Sanzar competition, they won it. They picked a completely different crew to play test matches down here against the likes of Fiji, Georgia, Chile. Got big wins. But the way they won as well, emphatically and sustaining their pressure, and they kind of, that group is about 40 players that played. And two of the big guns, I mean, Ethan Adams got injured. Marcus Millick didn't play in that because he got injured in that 15-minute cameo that he played for the Stormers. But there's so much talent there. And so what we've seen at a national level with Rassi, we've seen it on a 20 level, the casting of the net, just not relying on 23 players. And not saying that the 24 to kind of 46 are better, but saying they may have to play. And, you know, New Zealand always say, who's the next cab off the rank? Steve Hansen was famous for that.
Yeah.
And that's, we know who the next cab off the rank is, and that's great. You get to BOC training camp, you know, there's five cabs waiting. Not just what happens if the first cab goes, breaks down, who's next? So when I looked at that Bulls setup, for example, and a massive shout out to Akers and his support staff and what he's changed, and then the leadership on the field.
Yeah.
You know, the warhorse, Marcel Coetzee, is still going. He's not going to play for the Bucks, but what a servant for the Bulls. And then a guy who, every time they put up play of the match, like, these are the five options. Ruan Nokia never gets put there. To me, he's just been the standout tight forward this year in the URC for the Bulls. He was incredible again. 65 meters on the burst, attack meters, 16 tackles, how many carries, just four line-out takes, and just this calming influence, and that Franco Mosa type tank, that engine just doesn't stop. So Arasio will look at a player like that and think, wow. And, you know, he's come on leaps and bounds in the last two seasons. Jan-Hendrik Wessels is settling in nicely. Cameron Honecombe, as we said, Aurich Lowe starting to look like the sheriff of old. And then Embriz Papi, just from a Bull setup, the one aspect of his game, and I think obviously opposition teams and captains have spoken about it, is the time he takes from positioning the ball for his kick how referees are calling him out of it. He got a scrum put against him for not clearing in enough time. And I'm sure that's something they're going to work on as well, because his kicks were a bit hurried against Munster because there was this constant pressure. He's got to play it. And then one time he didn't, the guy blew the whistle and said it's a scrum to the other side. Is that something you've noticed in his game? I mean, we rave about his explosiveness and what he's done, but just that element of how long it takes to make that box kick.
Yeah, I suppose in the kicking game, what you want is you want to be able to ensure that the sort of the platform that you kick off, the base, is set every time, because it's a process. These guys, they have a process for every kick, and they want to make sure that they tick all of the boxes in that process. I think that's probably where the time comes from. If you're the defense, you want to rush the kicker as often as possible, because that's where the kick error rate goes up. So you probably find some comfort in that. I also think that referees are under pressure to keep the ball in play and to stop the game from being slowed down. And I would say not just at the balls. I've seen referees kind of call use it well before you can even see where the ball is. So I think that's maybe a directive coming from the top there. I wouldn't say it's specifically Ambrose, but I mean, that is a situation where you got sanctioned for it. And obviously that's something that he would want to improve on, not to have that situation again.
But, we from the first episode we ever did, we've spoken about this. Everyone's need to speed the game up. Referees, we're not to get the ball in play. But then they take 5 minutes to go to a TMO referral, and that's fine. Crazy. They give a guy 2 minutes to tie up his shoelaces. That's fine. A guy goes down out of play. They stop the play. That's fine. But they don't allow the second shove for South African teams in the scrum. Play the ball, because you've won it already.
But maybe I want
to. Maybe I want to win the penalty.
Exactly.
Then, the other thing that I've never understood that's now become, you know, it becomes fashionable every season. Certain things with the referees. One referee will let you play basically for 30 seconds to a minute and a half from a knock-on and say, but you were always under pressure.
Yeah.
Now, I may get the scrum feed and still be under pressure. So what, do they bring me back and say, no, you've got to have a proper scrum? It's just madness the way those things are interpreted. That's my little rant about play it off the scrum and kind of trying to depower our physical imposing scrums.
Yeah.
But when I look at the Stormers scrum, which was just, it's embarrassing what they did to Cardiff on grass, okay? And I looked at those Cardiff props, and they looked like they'd come out of the pub and they'd just been put straight back into the pub. And they must have thought, wasn't it bad enough playing the box every funeral? I saw those same guys come on Saturday and like, oh my goodness. That Cardiff tight head prop looked like he had been put through the arena, beaten up, had a big night, walked out of modular at 5 in the morning, told that he had to do a training session, and then told to scrum against the Stormers, and that was 10 minutes into the game.
Well, I don't think Asorati's complexion really helps. He's a Welshman, and he's very pale, and the more he played and the more he got scrummed, the purpler he got. So I think by the time he went off, everyone was relieved that he was going to be somewhere safe. But yeah, they put in obviously a great effort from Cardiff to try and back up the victory in the Welsh capital, and to come to Cape Town on a week turnaround and give the Stormers a bit of a run for their money at times in that game was a good effort.
Yeah, it's a good effort, but look, the reserve tight head, every time he turned to the ref, he's saying, I've been yellow carded. Why? Well, I think I need to go. I want to get off. But they actually worked a clever thing. One got subbed, the other one got yellow card, and they couldn't scrum.
Yeah.
So that's one way of going to uncontested scrums. It's just madness what was applied there. I look at a Cardiff and everyone's raving. Guys, sixth place, first ever quarterfinal. Lions, fantastic. I've used that word. I've heard that word used. Fantastic, magnificent season. Stormers, what went wrong? Well, they're going to a semi-final. They came third.
Yeah.
Bulls, why only fourth? So when you look at, and people forget about the Sharks because they were out of the top eight. They ended 10th, but there's so much hope for next season. When you look at expectation, and that's why Stormers, Bulls, North, South, they are our two teams. They are our DNA. They are our identity.
Yep.
That it's good that there's that expectation of, well, why didn't the Stormers end one or two? And then for the other team, just like, what a season. I mean, how do you explain that?
I mean, it makes perfect sense to me, because I think, if a lowly team in the English Premiership finds a way to win half of their matches and finishes 10th, everybody goes, wow, this is amazing. I've been a Millwall fan my whole life, that kind of stuff. And if the Gunners finish 6th or 7th behind Tottenham, or United finish behind City or vice versa, then it's a huge tragedy because the standards are different. And I think that's related to the quality of the players on the roster, the quality of the coaching, and then obviously the tradition, the history of those sides. So obviously Man City's a all-world club, And Millwall, I don't even know what division they're in anymore. You'd probably know. I don't know where they are these days. But
mate, what I do know is that I stayed in New Cross Gate in 1994.
Yes. And this is the juice, mate. This is the juice.
Basically, what mattered there was New Cross Gate in a council flat, 1994.
Yes, baby.
And that's where Millwall comes from. And some interesting experiences I had at the New Cross Gate subway station. There was always a guy that used to beg, and he would say, "Hello, Gov, how about a fiver?" And I'd say, "Sorry, mate, I've got no cash." He says, "No harm at all, Gov. No harm in asking." And then I would do that. I was kind of like working at some of the newspapers, and I'd do that 11 o'clock in the evening, last train run to New Cross Gate. And there was always some guy preaching, using the train as his kind of training ground. There was always some hobo trying to drink, and this guy was taking demons out of him and kind of preaching to him, "Let the demons be gone. Hand it in.
Give me my chinny."
So Millwall comes from there, mate.
Wow,
not to be messed with. Not to be messed with. And they're actually in the championship, and they were close to going to the premiership, but they're not there yet.
There you go, mate.
But you don't want to mess with those guys.
There you go. Now, if they'd made it to the championship, you wouldn't expect them to be in the top six at the end of next season.
If they made it
into the Premier League, you wouldn't expect it to be top six.
No,
but well done.
But I would also not expect them to lose a fight at home outside of the exactly. So well done to the Lions. But I think that expectation of the Bulls and Storm is exactly where we want to be.
No, look, and you look at the quality of the players there. I mean, it's some of the sort of the key Springbok players are on those two squads. And I suppose that's why fans in Durban have reason to be upset with where the Sharks are at the moment, because that's also a star-studded roster. That's the Galacticos, as we always say. So the expectation, I think, is related to the quality of players. That's how people measure the quality of a team. And thank goodness. I mean, Matt, we all deserve a good pat on the back here. You've got two South African teams in the final four of the URC. We're doing good things down here in the Republic.
Yeah, third and fourth place, emphatic, comfortable home wins by 20 and 30 points, respectively. After a long season, 18 matches, again, the big lesson there is if the Bulls and the Stormers, and I think they can be competitive in the Investec Champions Cup, pick your strongest teams to play those four matches, get a home quarterfinal, last 16 advantage, and you can go through. We know that 12 out of 18 is probably where teams go in URC. Back yourself to drop a game and make it up in the back end of the season, but you can't lose one or two games in the pool stages of the Investec Champions Cup and go through it. Just not even Toulouse can do that. We saw that happen this season. Played 4-1-2. They had to travel for the quarterfinal against Bordeaux, and they got beaten by 15 points comfortably. Mm. When I look at individuals, a guy that just keeps on standing strongest is Paul de Villiers. He was outstanding again. Vital turnovers, changed the complexion of certain moments in the game. It's not the Russie type player we've ever seen picked, but it's a Heinrich Brousseau all over again. There surely has to be a place for a guy like that in a national setup.
I mean, I would think so. I would think so. I suppose it depends a little bit on how you're going to play your defense. And the Box are a team that can physically dominate collisions, which kind of takes the need for a guy to go and steal the ball slightly off. I would say you could argue that. But Paul de Villiers, to me, is absolute quality. Amongst the forwards, mate, I would say centimeter for centimeter of height, he must be pound for pound, centimeter for centimeter, the best forward in the country. I mean, what he does, mate, with his base is just unreal. His ability to get in over the ball, win penalties and win possession. And he's hell of a smart, hell of a high work rate. He's really, really quality player. I'd love to see a guy like that in the mix. I think he could be a real difference maker if France, Ireland and New Zealand ever get back to being a challenge for the Springboks.
Can he play hooker?
Hopefully not, mate. I would hate to see him in the front row.
Because, Marco van Staden had to reinvent himself.
Oh.
It's like you've got to have more than one positional capability, I think, to make this Box set up. But I thought he was outstanding again in a very, very strong Stormers set piece. There were 9 Stormers forwards invited to Russie's National Alignment Camp, and you can see why, the way they have destroyed teams. But, you know, it's always that weak stick, our wonderful partners. Talk about hybrid, talk about power tools. Andre Esterhazen is the ambassador. He hasn't been in action because the Sharks haven't been in the URC playoffs. But as he always reminds us in this clip, that if he's not on the field, he's always got a tool in his hand.
Some players choose a side. They've always said a back can never be a forward. But with Steco, Ryobi didn't just reinvent the rules, it changed the entire game. Hybrid tools for a hybrid craftsman. Skeko, shaping the future. 40 years of Ryobi credibility.
Man, I'm going to switch it up this week, man.
Do you want me to say that again?
No, that was beautiful. I had a good chuckle. Mate, I'm going to switch it up this week. Usually I pick a try scorer. This week I'm going to pick a guy who created a try. It came down to two for me, one of two options. Second place goes to Willy Larue, mate. Andre Pollard with the cross kick. Munster tried to clear. It goes to Willy. And vintage Willy with the goose step, mate. Cuts the line and sends Kurtley Aronson over for the try. Fantastic stuff. Really wound the clock back. It was lovely to see the Silver Fox doing his stuff. But for me, the Steko moment of the week, mate, goes to Damien Willemse. I thought he had one of his best games ever at fullback for the Stormers at the weekend. Was sensational in coverage. Just played his heart out. It was outstanding to see. And there's a moment in the game, mate, where he takes the ball to the line. Also a little bit of a goose and then around the back offload. And Zuss powers up the left-hand touchline and runs over a defender for a sensational try. So that there is my Steko Power Tools Hero of the Week.
And you know, when you pick a Stormer, I'm going to go, amen, brother. Because we haven't had a Stormer for a while.
Well, we do have one now, mate. And this is the part of the season where you want to be having Stormers.
All right. So Damien Willemse, so well done. He was outstanding. He is our Steko Hybrid Power Tool Hero of the Week. Remember, Andre Estner is an ambassador to Steko, and from our thanks always, thanks to Steko for all the support you've given us. Thanks to Macron for all the support you give us. You will see Zels and myself over the next few weeks. We'll be in nice new kit because...
Mate, you really got the reflectors on, mate. Looking good.
I walked in with two big bags and I said to Zels, that's from Macron, it's from Rossi Peter, so enjoy it and stop moaning, mate. Stop moaning. Take that Stormers Adidas off occasion and put on your Macron. So, Zalzi to Macron, thanks very much. Remember, SA Rugby's magazine, it's the last month. 100,000 Rand you can win. Register, give us your name, give us your address. We'll send you newsletters in the draw to win 100,000 Rand. And we're all getting excited for playing England on the 4th of July. But the big one, obviously, three test matches against the All Blacks, rugby's greatest rivalry, four matches against the URC teams, and then the fourth test in Baltimore in the United States of America. So we do look at Super Rugby Pacific, a traditional kind of league at the end of the phase. Four New Zealand teams in the top four. Top six go through. There's a lucky loser. It's the usual suspects. It's the Hurricanes. It's the Chiefs. And a late surge from the Crusaders. And obviously the Blues hanging in there, they've had a fall off. But from an All Black perspective, I want to know who's starting to look like the real deal in the context of the Springboks.
That's a great question, mate. I haven't been keeping a very close eye on Super Rugby, but I will say, obviously, guys like Lestify and Ganuku have sort of caught a lot of headlines, got a lot of airtime for their switches. You know, he's moved to flank and obviously playing some good rugby there. The question is Dave Rennie going to deploy him in that kind of a way or not? And like we've been saying for a couple of weeks now, the question is also around what Dave Rennie's initial squad is going to look like. Is it going to be filled with guys that are veterans, or is it going to be filled with guys that he's earmarked, rough diamonds that he plans to polish into All Blacks? And obviously we'll know that as we get closer to the series. But yeah, I mean, just the sort of jeopardy in Super Rugby where the Hurricanes are top of the log, but they can take a hiding. Crusaders are back in the mix. Chiefs go up and down. It seems like there are some interesting dynamics in that competition amongst the New Zealand teams. They're all in the mix for the playoffs, mate. You know, you've got those six sides that are there in the final six for the Super Rugby title. And my personal favourites, the guys that I want to see where the Rennie uses, is obviously Tava Nawai from the Highlanders at inside centre. He's a guy I'd love to see. Ruben Love is a media favourite. He's a guy that everybody wants to see get an opportunity at 10. The Sullivan brothers are two guys I'd like to see more of. So I'm hopeful that Dave Rennie's going to dig that deep and maybe roll the dice a bit like JP's done at the Sharks. I think he's going to find some guys we don't really know too well and who may catch us by surprise. I hope he doesn't lean too heavily onto the veterans. And in a way, the exclusion of some of these veterans to injury may be a good thing.
Yeah, and then I look at Cam Roygaard. He is, without a doubt, one of the best nines in the world. Reminds me so much of the late US Funavest days, and physically imposing, just takes on the defense, adds that dimension in terms of physicality, which is what you need against a team like the Bucks.
Yep.
And then he played the first half. They played quite a weekend 23 because they'd already qualified top. They took a big one at the weekend. But then Jordy Viljoen came on and had a very good game. He's played New Zealand at 20. For those who don't know, his dad, Jochie Viljoen, played for Province, played for the Stormers, and played for the Springboks, midweek Springboks, relocated to New Zealand some 25 years ago. I think he may have met his wife on a Super Rugby tour. But Jan Viljoen is the offspring and the product of that, and he's highly rated in New Zealand. He's only 22 years old. And then playing behind Cam Røygaard, I mean, he can only be the beneficiary of that. But to see Wallace coming through, he had injuries in the beginning of the season. You get a player like him, you get a player like Shannon Frizzell back, you get Cam Røygaard playing, Brody Retallick nearer the World Cup coming back at lock. That New Zealand pack starts looking different. Richie Muhunga back, that 9-10 axis look different. They've just got to fix their midfield. It'd be interesting to see who Dave Rennie sees as that midfield thing. He may lean on Anton Leonard Brown. He's playing for his team in Japan.
Correct.
Rennie's team is in the final. They'll play against France Ludica's team. They won comfortably. Menchez and Colby could come home early. He kicked three conversions and two penalties. So he's added a string to his bow. But those playoffs will be interesting to kind of see what kind of squad will be coming in South Africa. I think they'll bring 45 players, so most of them will be here. Mm. But who's actually going to play against the box? So that's been decided. Top 14 has been decided in terms of who goes into the playoffs. Toulon not making it in terms of the Investec Champions Cup. They ended ninth. Big surprise there. Shows how competitive it is. And then in the English Prem, down to one lost round of matches. But Thomas du Toit, one of your favourites, big raps he got from his club at Bath.
Yep. I won multiple awards there, Supporters Player of the Year, Players Player of the Year, Forward of the Year, and justly so. He's been a massive, massive asset to Bath and Johan van Kraan's plans there, and he'll come back to play for the Sharks at Durban next season with a sort of tailwind of newfound confidence and, I suppose, hunger to perform. So, Thomas du Toit on the move and on the run is a dangerous weapon, and I think he's added huge value at Bath and will add huge value at the Sharks.
All right. So four South African coaches in the URC semifinals. Two of them happen to be with the opposition. Three South African captains. Carl Steyn, who was outstanding again for Glasgow. Rory Steyn, his dad, was the late Madiba, late Nelson Mandela's personal security. So he'll always have strong South African roots. But a proud, proud Scot at the moment. That's on his mom's side and comes to the heritage. Really inspirational for Glasgow. He turned the game. Great cover tackle on Josh Ioane. And then the 50-22 from that line out, he scored the try and he got a late try. Love the way he plays. Also love the fact his accent is still very much South African. It's not a Scot. And just lekker rugby. We are going to chat later in the week, Zells, when we preview the URC semi-finals. But there's one result that I just want to mention. Sacks 16 at halftime. Parboys high 14. That's when I switched off. Told Monty I'm not listening to anymore. And then was told on Sunday evening the end score was Sacks 16 and Parboys high 32.